The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Hot Stove edition of the podcast. So we knew we'd be coming on tonight. We thought we'd be talking more about Tyler O'Neill, but an absolute bombshell, as I will call it, got dropped on Monday. Nick Pivetta, of all players on the Red Sox, gets the qualifying offer. The general reaction of the Bastards crew was probably shock. We never mentioned him one time in that episode because it seemed like a pretty stupid idea. So there's this is going to be a spicy episode. So sit back and we'll take you through it. But Nick Diamond, Jeremy Schilling, both with me tonight. Nick, we'll lead you off. What's your reaction?
I think my reaction is the same as I would say the majority of the Red Sox fans. I only saw a couple delusional fans out there that really were like, yeah, this was a good idea. I would say 95% of the fans out there were like, yeah, this was dumb. There's no reason to spend $21 million out of your $60 million under the luxury tax on Nick Pivetta, who is a four starter at best. Realistically, he's a bullpen arm. That's what you want him to be. You don't want him in your starting rotation if you're going to go win a World Series. You don't give him $21 million when you have so many other holes to fill. It's just stupid. You just hope that he just somehow doesn't take this qualifying offer, which, in my opinion, there's 0% chance that he doesn't. But if he does, Breslow will somehow – I'm not going to call him a genius. It'll be all luck if Pivetta doesn't take this qualifying offer. There was no reason to offer him this. I don't even want to hear a take that will say this was a good idea. You can't convince me otherwise. I think it was a terrible idea, and it's going to come back to bite them because now you have Lucas Giolito and Nick Pivetta in your starting rotation who are probably going to give you a 4-5 ERA at best. And they're also making $40+ million combined. So it's just, it's embarrassing how we had to give Nick Pivetta, a career 4-5 ERA guy, $21 million guaranteed next year. Well, you probably could have got him. If you wanted him back, you probably could have got him for 3 years, $36 million. I mean, I'd rather have given him that contract than winning your 21 when you're trying to stay under the, I don't want him to stay under the luxury tax, but we know that's going to happen. So there's no reason to give $21 million to him. Just, I'll give it up to someone else here, but I'm not happy about this one at all.
Jeremy.
So I don't hate the player. I like the player. I'm going to slightly disagree with Nick where I don't think he's a problem at 4 or 5 when he's not expected to start in the playoffs. So if he's a depth piece in your rotation, I think that's a good spot for him. I do think he's a big league starting pitcher, but he also provides the flexibility he provided 2 years ago when he came in after the starter, and he was a bullpen arm, but he was also starting games. But he's shown that he's going to compete whenever he's put in the game. And so I want the player on the roster, don't get me wrong. But my question becomes, if you decided you wanted the player – and you were considering tagging him, why in the hell did you not approach him during the season and try to extend him? We do this podcast every 3 to 4 days. It never came up. There was no rumor. There was nothing. So, you know, you showed a willingness to extend Bayo and Rafaela in the spring training. At some point, they realized Pivetta was potentially in their future, and they just let it get to this point. It doesn't make any sense to me. If you guys have information that they did try to reach out and they were like, no way, we're not doing it till the offseason, then maybe that changes it. But I haven't heard anything. And then that goes to my biggest concern besides spending is there's no plan. There's no plan. So if they've already just burned $21 million out of the 60 that, because we know they're not going over the minimum, the first luxury tax threshold, then what's the plan with $40 million left? You know, an elite starting pitcher is going to cost you 30. So you essentially have waved the flag that you're not considering that. And so the chances of them going outside the organization and making a big time a contribution is minimal. This is the signal. So get ready, and you hit on this, Nick. Totally agree with you. Get ready for the BS we're adding by getting Giolito back, which is the same BS they pull at the trade deadline when they do nothing. Well, we're getting, you know, Cassis back, and we're getting, you know, Hendricks back. It's nonsense. And I if you're still buying that, then you're a moron. I don't know. It's already off to a sour taste. Now, Nick, the point I couldn't agree with you more is if their plan is to, because the compensation is a pick back, if I'm correct, right? Like
second rounder.
Yeah. Guys, I think it depends on who signs them. There's a chance it could be a first rounder if it's a team over the luxury tax or been over the luxury tax for 2 or 3 years in a row, something like that. But
so if you get an absolute stud, you're 3 to 4 years away on a player like that. Do they have any interest at all in improving the big league club? Maybe. I mean, it's ridiculous if that's what bad NFL teams do that are punting 3 or 4 years down the road is stockpile draft picks to build a better product. But those draft picks contribute right away. It doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense, and it pisses me off.
My total issue with this is if by some chance Pivetta doesn't take this offer, no other team is going to pay him now because of what was attached to him now. If there's a pick attached to him, no team is going to offer him a multi-year contract when they have to give up a second-round pick. They're going to wait until after the trade deadline, or what? Not the trade deadline. What am I talking about? The draft, like that Kimbrel did maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, and they'll sign him after that to a 2-3 year deal. They're not giving up a pick for Nick Pivetta. It's not going to happen. So I think Breslow just thinks he's not going to take this, and I just don't see it happening. I think that's the most embarrassing part.
So I agree he's going to take the offer. Here's the problem. There's four guys you know are a lock for the rotation next year. Lucas Giolito, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Brian Baio. They're all going in the rotation. So will Nick Pivetta at $21 million a year. He will go into the rotation at least to start the season. So it was kind of like my moment of doom when that dropped, because there's no reason to suggest whatsoever they're going to go get Max Fried or a lefty. Has Manaea, he hasn't agreed to his thing yet. No, so he's still technically a free agent, but Manaea got the qualifying offer as well. I think he stands a better chance of still getting signed despite the offer being attached to him. But regardless, so like Jeremy said, there's no plan here. And the insane thing to me is we keep waiting for them to splurge. We keep waiting for that big move to drop. And they waited 3 or 4 years just to give it to Pivetta for a year. This is the insane part. If he takes that offer, and we all suspect he will, he's going to be the third highest paid pitcher of all time in Red Sox franchise history for one season. Only David Price and Chris Sale made more in a single season than Nick Pivetta. That's how insane this is. I just can't. And here's the other thing too. I mean, he's got a 4.36 ERA in just the Red Sox portion of his career. So take out those bad Philly years. He still has a 4.36 ERA. Dick Fitz or Quinn Priester will probably give you pretty close to that for $700,000 next year. That's why this doesn't make any sense. Why would you shoot yourself in the foot this way? And if you're so convinced you're actually going to get another team's draft pick, why couldn't you just trade him last July and get a prospect you want? Someone you know you can get. Someone you can do a little bit of research on. You don't know who you're going to be selecting this summer in the draft. It's just, none of this makes any sense at all. And I keep saying, you have to start making smart decisions here. You want to see a pattern of at least stuff that makes sense. And this is just a continuation of the existing pattern that doesn't make sense. It's an extremely low IQ move from one of the dumbest front offices in Major League Baseball. There's no executives in any other office right now that are looking at the Red Sox saying, oh, that was a brilliant move by Breslow. Brilliant move to give Nick Pivetta the qualifying offer. It was dumb as hell. And in regards to O'Neill, I gave a take, and I think I've given this take a few times on the podcast. Breslow, he likes to stick to what he knows. He's got a very narrow comfort zone, and that free agent market is the scariest thing in the world to him. And this is an example of that. He knows Nick Pivetta. And we're not breaking the pattern. We're not upgrading at all. We're sticking to the same pattern. Now you just have Nick Pivetta for triple the price last year. I'm not exaggerating. Triple the price. He made $7 million last year, and he wasn't even that good. Now we're going to pay him $21 million. It's disgusting, and it doesn't make sense.
Well, doesn't it also mean that we're starting the season without a left-handed starting pitcher?
Most likely.
Yeah.
So Giolito, Houck, Crawford, Bayo, and Pivetta, which he admitted during the trade deadline by acquiring Paxton that we needed a left-handed starting pitching. Obviously, we all had strong feelings on that, but he at least admitted it by going to get somebody. It was obviously ill-conceived and failed immediately. But why are we not using the full offseason to address that need? Why? What is going on? Like, I can't even discuss it any further. It's that stupid. Like, is there a plan to package maybe Bayo with a prospect and go get an elite left-handed guy? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. We're just going to go do the same thing we did last year, which means the first 100 games, this podcast is going to be complaining the whole time about how we don't have a balanced starting rotation.
My take a couple days ago was, if you're going to offer this to Nick Pivetta, why not trade a starter for Jorge Soler like the Angels just did? Or, I mean, Cooper Criswell, I'm not saying they would have done it for Cooper Criswell, but Cooper Criswell had better stats than Griffin Cannon did last year. And I think Criswell is just 1 year older. I mean, Cannon has more pedigree, better stuff, but Griffin Cannon sucks. And I think that we could have gotten Soler for a very mid starting pitcher. And then the Nick Pivetta offer would make a little bit more sense. It still wouldn't make sense, but at least if you traded a depth starter for Jorge Soler, it would have made sense to bring Pivetta back. But now it's so stupid.
Let's get into real quick. What contract would Nick Pivetta have to be offered to say no to this? I'm thinking he needs at least 3 years, 45, a similar deal to Eflin.
I was going to say 460.
Okay, so that's an extra year then, at the same rate that I just gave you.
Yeah, I mean, an extra $6 million a year. It's kind of what Teoscar took, the one-year deal instead of the multi-year deal with the Red Sox.
Yeah, we offered him two at $28 million, so 14 per, and he got one for 23. So it made no sense. He was just going to recoup the rest of that this year into probably a much bigger multi-year deal, and I think he will. But I think a minimum, you could be right, but I'm going to say a minimum of 3 years, $45 million. That'd be 15 per. And it could be higher. The Mass Live guys think it has to be 3 years, $63 million. That would be what Chris Bassett essentially got from the Mets. So I don't see how you walk away from 21. It's just nobody. And the reason I'm pointing this out is, who in their right mind would give Nick Pivetta the deal that we just tossed around from my lower end to your higher end? Who's going to give him that?
With a pick attached.
With a pick attached. It's like,
I think without a pick attached, you might get the 4 years, 60, but not with a pick attached. Absolutely not.
I'd be furious if my team gave Nick Pivetta that. I just don't think he's that good. Now, you mentioned the 3 years, 36, so that's 12 per. I would be annoyed with that deal if we signed it, but I can't destroy it because he can start for you, and then if you can't resolve your bullpen, you put him in the bullpen, and he holds down your seventh or eighth inning. Or 2 innings at a time, because our bullpen is a major. I don't trust Breslow to resolve that. He's going to add to it. I don't doubt that, but I just don't know if it's going to be the right guys that are capable of holding down those last few innings. I'm assuming Whitlock, probably the closer. Hendricks, who knows what he's got left in the tank, but he's going to pitch some late innings. And Pivetta on a 12-year deal, a $12 million a year deal. I mean, you could slot him in there if you had to in a pinch, but it's extremely ominous to me that we're going to bring him back for $21 million and we're going to have the same rotation as last year plus Giolito, who's an extreme wild card. Go ahead.
So he's 31, going into his age 32 season.
That's correct.
I mean, why would his mindset not be go take the 21 guaranteed, pitch well, and get one last multi-year deal and maximize the dollars? So I'm not exactly sure what the contract would be, but I think it'd have to be more towards Nick's scale for him to walk away from the opportunity to maximize the last 3 or 4 years of his career.
Well, and he couldn't get a qualifying offer the next year.
Yeah, so or ever again.
He won't get it next year.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. And let's say he takes the 21 and then he's not that great. He could still get a two-year deal for, let's say, $8 million a year. So that brings you to $37 million over 3 years, having bet on himself. There's no downside in taking that if you're Nick Pivetta. None whatsoever. You're going to take that deal.
Unless you have a significant injury.
Well, I mean, you're getting
if he gets Tommy John, then he's gonna
that will
blow for him.
That's probably true, yeah. Because
it's still $21 million. If you asked Nick Pivetta 3 years ago if he was gonna get a contract for $21 million a year, he would have laughed at. No way he would have thought that was gonna happen.
I'll bet you Nick Pivetta was more shocked than we were when he got the news from his agent. I don't think it's going to take very long. I don't think, you know, his agent can't let him turn that down, because you take the 21 and then you go into next winter with no pick attached. You have a wide open market. Best case, and none of us really believe it, you might have two or three teams maybe interested, and the deal might not be what Pivetta wants anyway. So just when you thought the Red Sox couldn't get any dumber, like, we did not bring up Nick Pivetta's name one time the other night because we're like, And if we did, the words out of my mouth would be like, there's no way they're that stupid. They would never give him a qualifying offer and handcuff themselves for another year. It's just, I can't make any sense of it. Your best hope at this point is that they make a trade for a young pitcher who's not making a lot of money. That's all you've got left to cling to. Max Fried is not coming. And what's Max Fried going to get? Nick, what's your estimate on that?
200, because I think Corbin Burns gets more.
Oh, really? I didn't think Fried would
get. I don't know. I see a lot of people around like 180. Roki Sasaki, if he gets posted, gets like the league minimum. He goes through arbitration. And I think that's going to make a big difference. If the Dodgers can get him, I think the markets will go down. If the Dodgers don't get Roki Sasaki and he doesn't get posted, I think they'll be in on Corbin Burns and Fried, and those markets will go way back up.
Let me see what Trade Rumors has. He must be in their top 10. We're going to start that tentatively Sunday for the listening audience, so we'll do spots 40, or I should say 41 through 50. I'm just trying to see. I thought Max Fried would be about 5 years, 100. Okay, so MLB Trade Rumors has him at 6 years, 156. So he's kind of in the middle of where we were. So that's
what did Carlos Rodon get?
Oh, something.
6 years, 160?
About that. I think that's about what it was. Yeah.
I could see him getting slightly more than that then.
I guess so, and that's actually not a bad comp, and he's healthier than Rodon. He's got a better, I think he had 1 year less than 100 innings in the last 5 or 6 years, but historically, Fried has been a very healthy guy. And much like I've always been a fan of, he always pitches well in big games, you know, like Eduardo Rodriguez kind of did, and Fried is better than Rodriguez, don't get me wrong, but those big game pitchers are players that I covet, guys that can handle the moment. So I think at 6-156, I would do it, but I don't think the Red Sox would do it. And so one last thing to get into, I do want to get into Gerrit Cole for just a couple minutes, but one last thing here. The Red Sox payroll is never going to be lower than it is this year. And the reason I say that is your young guys are going to get extensions. Roman Anthony might get one before he even debuts. He could get one this winter. Kyle Teal, there's going to be some extensions that take place. So we're sitting, actually, I had it almost pulled up. Ah, crap. I just got out of it. Oh, here we go. I think we're at 154. Is that correct for the year? Master Google spreadsheet. I reference this a lot, but the payroll, there's a Twitter account called Red Sox Payroll. So if you want to see exactly where you're at, that's where you want to do it. Huh, it's only showing me 2024, which does not help. Well, I'm not going to fiddle with it for now, but oh, here we go, 2025. Okay, it's showing 175 right now, but I don't think you're going to be any lower than that ever with all these extensions coming up. This is the year you're going to make your big moves if you ever intend to make them.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is because they overachieved for a large portion of last year. The pieces are in place. The prospects are ready or going to be ready throughout the year. And if you're gearing up to try to win at the same time those prospects are infused into the lineup, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a pretty decent free agent class. Like there's one starting pitcher you can sign, and it doesn't even have to be a Corbin Burns type guy. I think it all just got wiped away here, with, with the Pivetta thing. Now, he has 2 weeks from yesterday. So what was that? He has until the 19th, I guess. So I don't think it's going to take nearly that much time. I would be shocked. Today's what, Tuesday? I'd be shocked if Friday afternoon rolls around and we don't have a verdict on what his decision will be. That's plenty of time for his agents to survey the market and decide whether or not they want to do something other than the $21 million.
One thing I kind of want to add, like what Jeremy brought up, I don't think it's a non-zero. I don't think it's a 0% chance that they trade a starting pitcher. I know Jeremy brought up maybe put Bayo and go get a bigger name pitcher, but I kind of think it's more Cutter Crawford that they would trade. I know they kind of hyped him up trying to make 32 starts or whatever it was, 30 starts. Maybe another team will kind of buy high on him and then they may go sign a starting pitcher, but I still don't think that happens. I think this is their move, and I think they're going to try to sell as Quinn Priester and Dick Fitz. So, but I think there is a tiny chance that they will trade a starting pitcher for some kind of bat, maybe to replace Tyler O'Neill, and then they will still try to add a starting pitcher through free agency. But I think that's a low percent. I think if that's their plan, it makes a little bit more sense, but I think it's a stupid plan.
I don't know how the front office, they obviously have a perception problem. I mean, they've been getting cooked every winter, but I don't know how it doesn't intensify here. I don't know how the WTFs from all the, you know, the industry people, you know, rival executives, national beat writers, local beat writers. I don't know how. Lou Maloney yesterday tried to paint a positive spin on it, and it was like, well, let's just see what happens, you know, that type of thing. Like, maybe there's a corresponding move here that'll make it make sense. But tripling his salary from last year, he's not going to be that good. If he starts in the rotation, I guarantee you he goes to the bullpen to get himself fixed. And that's not what a $21 million a year pitcher is.
Well, the other thing is, doesn't it make it harder to trade him when this whole thing comes around next year and they're 500 again? Or worse, and now even the prorated salary left is $8 or $9 million. So now you're facing a thing where you probably have to eat some of that money just to move them. There's no plan here. There's no plan.
They should have just traded them last year.
Agreed, although we don't know what the market was.
At this point, it doesn't look like it matters.
Yeah.
Could have got something for him.
Let me ask you guys this. Let's go through them one by one super quick. Do you expect Hauk to be better or worse than he was last year?
Worse.
I expect him to be more consistent, so better.
I lean towards worse, but I don't feel strongly about it, but I mean, last year was really good.
But if he has a 3.5,
okay.
I think that's worse.
Well, let's just say worse for now. All right, Cutter Crawford, better or worse than last year?
I think what we got is kind of where he is and who he is, and I think he's going to be around that.
I'll say I agree with that, but I'll say worse because he was healthy this year and didn't really miss any starts. I don't think he could perform better. I think he could only not make every start. I mean, I think that's what we got out of him. That's the best he's going to have.
I think he's going to be far worse. And I feel strongly about that. Okay, Brian Bayo, better or worse?
Better.
I say better.
I agree with that. All right. So we got one guy we definitely all agree on. And Pivetta, do you think he'd be better or worse than last year? I'd say the same.
I think what we saw is what he is.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think he'll be the one guy they can count to make 30 starts if you give him the opportunity to.
Okay. So, and then with Giolito, I mean, we can only speculate. I mean, he was trash before he got hurt. The last two healthy years of you know, his service time, he was trash. So he needs to overcome that, and he needs to overcome the injury. And I just think it's a real long shot. And we don't even know about innings limits right now. Like, how is he going to be managed?
Well, we know it's going to be, we're going to be hearing pitch limits and all that for the first 5-10 starts. And that's, I mean, it's just, it's so annoying with a team that needs to get off to a hot start, especially because we know they're not going to add at the deadline. So it's just right. It just puts you in a position where even if he's pitching well, he comes out after four innings. The bullpen then has to go use 3-4 arms. So if you have a bad start behind him or in front of him, then you're just taxing the bullpen and creating problems for yourself.
Right. And for what it's worth, if he pitches 140 innings, it doesn't matter if they're good innings or bad innings, if he reaches 140, a vesting option triggers for 2026. So you can potentially have him for 2 years. But we just went through the tentative rotation here. And, I mean, from a general standpoint, we don't expect it to be as good as it was last year. And I don't think Duran will be very good, but I don't think it'll be quite what he was last year. So it's just tough. It's just tough to get this team to 90 wins. I don't know how they're going to do it. And
wait, well, so as we sit here right now, and they're going to add a right-handed bat, without a left-handed starting pitcher really in the system, because the guys you mentioned, Dick Fitz and
Quinn Priester.
Yeah, Priester. It's 7 right-handed starting pitchers. And as of right now, we still have an imbalance in the lineup. So we're essentially, unless Breslow shocks us and the $40 million is available to fix at least the lineup, we are recreating our own issues for 2024 in 2025. It's exhausting. And we talked about it all year, and he admitted they were problems by flipping McGuire for, now I'm forgetting his name, the right-handed backup catcher from
Jansen.
Toronto. Jansen. And acquiring Paxton in the rotation. So he admits at the deadline, although he does it with dollar store buys, that these are problems we need to address, and then we're going to go through the offseason, and it's looking like it's going to be the same issues over again. There's no plan. It's pathetic. This is ridiculous.
I called into my local sports radio station today. I do that once or twice a week, and I'm usually on for just probably 3 or 4 minutes. But I asked the host, I'm like, how many times have you seen Step Brothers? And he goes, oh, a lot. I said, 20, 50. He goes, probably closer to 20. And you guys have seen it, I'm assuming, a lot of times. So the scene where they show up for the job interview, and it's Seth Rogen doing the interview, and they show up in the suits, and then one of them just rips one. And then Rogan's like, you know what? Now the suits look really bleeped up. Well, I gave a Red Sox scenario with that. I said the suits are the Paxton trade. The fart is the Pivetta qualifying offer. and then Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are both Craig Breslow. And that's the Red Sox tie into the scene. And so it's just, it doesn't make any sense. You can dress Breslow up to be whatever you want him to be, but it's a clown show, and he's not an intelligent executive. He's got no feel for the job whatsoever.
So my last take on this is, Terry, I think it was you mentioned that we expected some supplement, like an assistant general manager or something, right? And I know they added somebody from the Devil Rays, but he's more in the analytics. Even if this idea comes up in a meeting, who in the organization is telling them no? Where are the safeguards that prevent something this stupid from happening?
John Henry is probably it. It should be Theo. That what is his job? He's not doing that. Like
managing Roush Racing and
Liverpool. Exactly. I mean, this is exactly what Theo should be brought in for, to teach your rookie general manager or CBO what to do. I mean, what else is he getting paid for if he's not going to teach Craig Breslow, a guy that went to the same college as him, what to do? I mean, you know, Theo's not giving Nick Pivetta a qualifying offer. 99% of the world would not give him a qualifying offer. Who told Breslow this was a good idea?
Well, it's not only that, Nick, is in a structured organization, the guy at the top may have an idea, but he has to have feedback from those that work underneath him to push back against bad ideas. And it's clearly not happening. And that's a significant issue.
To me, I think Kennedy has the keys to the asylum. To me, I think he's the biggest problem in there. And I've said it over and over again. I mean, O'Halloran's been there forever. Romero, Ferreira, they've all been there since 2004, 2007. And they're outdated. They're antiquated. They're not how they tackled stuff back then is not how you do it in 2025.
So Terry, it goes beyond that. Four last place finishes in the last 6 years?
Right? Is it? Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Four out of six, okay, and so we've missed five out of six playoffs.
So when you have an organization that has failed as much as we have had, where is moving on from key management roles? We're just rolling with the same dudes.
That's exactly it.
So then the culture, you're left with a culture that accepts losing and mediocrity, if we could even get there. The whole thing is completely bleeped. And it's perpetrated by the biggest problem the organization faces, which, as Nick said, is John Henry.
Yeah, Henry hasn't.
So if you have the same managers, you have to expect the same decision making and the same product on the field, and thereby the same result.
And just look at it. You know, I outlined how long they've been here, you know, going on 20 years. And then Breslow has never been an executive. And just to be clear, what he did with the Cubs with his assistant GM role handling the pitching stuff, that was a remote job. He wasn't even at Wrigley, you know, sitting in on calls, observing what the other executives do. So as far as I'm concerned, he's never been an executive before. And so he's got all these guys with 20 plus years, and then he comes in and we're to believe that he's the brains of it. It's not a believable thing. And that's why nobody wanted the job. Nobody was going to come into this front office having to keep all those guys and not have their own people around them. He still hasn't filled the GM role under him that Mike Hazen served as under Dombrowski, and O'Halloran had it under Bloom, but that was probably a mandate. And I don't think Chaim Bloom was a good executive, but they all turned on him in the final year. None of them were backing him. They were all blaming him. And then the last 2 months of Heim's tenure, he spent more of that time in Worcester, in Portland, checking out the prospects. And he wasn't hanging out with O'Halloran and Romero and Kennedy anymore. So it's a toxic front office. It's extremely toxic and it's incompetent. And what worse of a combination could there be besides toxic and incompetent?
Stupid.
That's exactly it. my reaction tweet to the Pavetta thing was that imagine selling your car for $7,000 and then buying it back for $21,000. And then I said, now change the thousands to millions. And that's exactly what they just did with Pavetta. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, let's get into Garrett Cole real quick. We'll just spend just literally a few minutes on it. So, you know, we gave a range of takes. I said the Yankees should move on from him. Just see this as an opportunity to shed that money, get creative. Like I was saying, with our own circumstances, there's plenty of starting pitching out there. You go get Blake Snell if you want. You can go get Max Fried. All are going to be better deals than the 140 remaining on Cole, 144. And so that was my take. And I think the expectation was the Yankees would begrudgingly take add that year, and then, you know, he would finish out the next 5 years. Well, what did end up happening was the Yankees stood firm and said absolutely not on that extra year to be tacked on. And then they wouldn't even renegotiate anything. So Scott Boras had to convince the Yankees to just take him back at whatever the balance of the contract was without the option being tacked on. So Boras literally shit his pants. Major misstep there. But he hasn't had a good last 18 months or so.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of egg on his face. It's his job to understand the market and to properly advise his client of what his options are. And it seems as if he just shot from the hip and didn't have a plan. Maybe he's hanging out with Breslow. I don't know. But it didn't make any sense. And then it looks so bad to have to go back hat in hand and just basically ask for the handout. You know, and I don't know if this is kind of the beginning of the end for Breslow, because if you're a prospective superstar looking for an agent, is that the type of advice you want to be getting and the type of representation? It looks bad. I'm sorry. It does. And I think it's a problem for Boras in his career. And Cole, who already has done a bunch of things that I think make him look bad and soft, you know, he kind of by extension looks soft.
He's a beta male, as I said. Chris Sale would be the alpha male. And so, you know, they're both on different spectrums there. Nick, what were your thoughts?
I think it was best case scenario for the Yankees, honestly. I mean, I'm surprised Cashman didn't just pay up that fifth year. That's what I really thought was going to happen. I thought the Yankees would just do it because they had to, and they thought if there was a chance we lose Cole and Soto in the same offseason, they would be so screwed. But it worked out for them. And on Boras here, I think he is done. I don't think any player is going to trust him anymore. I think this situation was embarrassing. What happened last year was embarrassing. And there's a chance it could happen again. If he tries to get $300 million for like Corbin Burns and Bess offers $200, I don't know. He should take it. And I think there's a chance that he screws up and Corbin Burns is stuck out there for a while too. And I kind of agree. I think Boras is done after one or two more years. I think we finally saw the end of him. The players are fed up with him. The owners are fed up. I don't think any these new age GMs like to deal with him. I guess there's a few older ones still out there that have dealt with him in the past, but I think Boras is on his way out of baseball. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I kind of enjoy him. I kind of like those winter meeting press conferences he puts on and kind of advertises all of his clients. But, you know, it's probably a good thing for baseball that he's on his way out.
Jeremy, you had something else?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, so when a professional makes his money, like Boras obviously has, how much is he actually working? You know, is he still working the phones, following the market, living, breathing it so that when he goes into a situation like this, he has a feel for it? Or is he just shooting by the hip and hoping his name and his brand is enough? And it sounds like it's the latter.
Well, his only path forward is if he puts his ego aside and just, you know, sticks to a certain set of principles to get his players the best deal. Now, what Nick was referring to, the press conferences during the winter meetings, everybody looks forward to that. And the theme of most of those press conferences the last few years is Boris shooting down the notion of analytics being relevant in certain cases. And I don't think you can argue that anymore. Like, the analytics are going to dictate most of the contracts players sign. So it's just, you can't, that can't be in his playbook anymore. And, you know, so with Cashman, the tragic thing for him is he kind of did have to take Cole on the balance of his deal because he's made a bunch of terrible decisions. The Rodon contract, that's not going to age well. He did get a decent season out of him this year. You got Stroman still on big money for 1 year. You didn't really have much of a choice there. But in a perfect world, he would have walked away. Because these are the penalty years of the contract. You're paying him these years because you thought in the first five you'd get your ring. Or a couple rings, ideally. And that didn't happen. So now he's on the back end. All of his metrics are declining. You know, his whiff rate, his chase rate, his strikeout rate, those are all declining. His walk rate is up. So you're seeing the normal decline here, and he's at the early part of it. So you can still get a couple of decent years out of him, but it's going to be painful at the end. And it's too bad Cashman.
And the injury. Add in the injury at the beginning of the year.
Tommy John could end his season, end his career, really. I mean, he'll come back, but what will he be at that point? So, I don't know. It just, a lot of what Cashman has done is really come back to haunt him. And, yeah, but it's telling. I mean, he did take him back, and they have to sign Soto, right? I mean, if we're going to take him seriously next season, so they must still be planning to back up the Brinks truck there. But it sucks being a Red Sox fan, and it's got to suck to be a Yankees fan as well, even coming off of a World Series appearance.
At least they're trying.
They are. And I envy that. I do. All right. So we'll wrap on that. Tentatively, we'll be back on Thursday to discuss any more nuggets. The GM meetings are going on right now, so there's a couple days left. Maybe a signing happens. Maybe we'll have a verdict on Pivetta. Maybe we'll have some spicy rumors to go over. So plan on that. And then tentatively Sunday, we'll do the first of five installments of the MLB trade rumors projections. So we start at the bottom of that, and then we work our way up to the top. So that was fun. We've had people already asking us about it, when we're going to get started. So we'll get on that in the coming days. So everyone have a good rest of your week. Take care.